From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The dictator's statue fell today. The offices of his regime were ransacked. Iraqis danced in the streets of Baghdad. And no one was watching more closely, with more rapt attention, than Iraqis in America. Tonight they are partying and remembering, and we will join them this hour on Point, the big day in Baghdad, through the eyes of Iraqis in America. We begin in Doha, Qatar, with reaction to the day's events from Intifad Kanbar, Washington director of the Iraqi opposition group, the Iraqi National Congress. He has traveled to Doha in preparation for a return to Iraq. I asked him his response today to the images coming out of Baghdad.
Happy, delighted, unbelievable scenes, but guess what? It's reality now.
And what is the reality that you're seeing in these images?
Freedom. Getting rid of Saddam, getting rid of the worst tyrant, which we spend most of our lives living under. This is something hard to believe.
What sticks in your mind from the parade of images we've all seen today in Intifad Kanbar?
Extreme happiness at the same time, a lot of sadness. Remembering my cousins who were killed, unfortunately, who did not see this day.
When you look at the faces today via television in Baghdad, what are you seeing there? Do these look like a people who feel fully liberated? Are they just testing the waters? Are they just responding to an American show of power? How do you interpret what you see there?
Those people are feeling liberated for the first time, feeling the freedom for the first time. It is like a baby learning how to walk, you know? This is a great experience.
Intifad Kanbar, how long have you been in exile from Iraq?
Since 1990.
Do you expect to return? I know you're in Doha, Qatar already. Are
yes.
you on your way back in? Do you expect to be yourself in the streets of Baghdad soon?
Yes, soon.
And you, of course, work with the Iraqi National Congress. What do you expect? What do you hope to do in Iraq?
Work for democracy, reconstruct Iraq, establish law and order, provide humanitarian aid, remove Saddam's remnants from the Iraqi society, de-ba'athify Iraq. A lot of work. We have a lot of work ahead of us.
What are you hearing from your Iraqi friends today? You must be on the telephone watching these images together. What are they saying?
A lot of joy, a lot of congratulations to each other.
Is it at all diminished by the fact that it's Americans who have brought in the firepower to accomplish this? Would you have preferred Iraqis to do it themselves, or was that simply impossible?
It doesn't matter at this point. It happened. Americans are our allies, and we're happy to see it.
You must have seen the image today of the big Saddam statue being toppled. I guess that's right in a fairly central part of Baghdad. Your thoughts as it went down?
I'm looking at it as we speak now. I can't get enough of this scene. I can see it 10 times a day, and I'm not satisfied enough. I'd like to see him toppled down the same way.
So how do you expect today's events to ripple out through the Iraqi exile community around the world, Intifad Kanbar?
Iraqi exile community is not a community that is disconnected from Iraq. Iraqi exile community have been in exile not by choice, but they were forced to leave Iraq. And this is something we are happy to see.
Do you think people will flood back to Iraq, or are things still too difficult there?
I think it's still difficult, but I think people are ready to take their chances and go and help to rebuild Iraq.
So how soon do you expect your feet to be walking the streets of Baghdad?
Maybe days.
Maybe days. After more than a decade.
More than a decade. But believe me, Baghdad never disappeared from my eyes one day.
What's the first thing you want to do when you get back to the capital city of Iraq?
Go to see my house, my family house, and go visit the graves of my cousins who were killed by Saddam.
How were they killed, Intifad Kanbar?
In the wars that Saddam created. Iranian front and the Kuwaiti front, and they were killed unwillingly.
Intifad Kanbar, we hear your joy today, and it's great to hear. Thanks very much for joining us in Doha, and talk to us when you're in Baghdad.
Very soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Intifad Kanbar, Washington director of the Iraqi National Congress. He spoke with me earlier from Doha, Qatar, on his way home to Iraq. An American tank pulled down a landmark statue of Saddam Hussein as Iraqis cheered, Iraqis danced and sang in the heart of Baghdad today. as they watched the images today at home and at work. Iraqis in America who left the country to escape Saddam's rule were transfixed. This was the unimaginable, and it was happening. There are hugs and amazement in the Iraqi community in America tonight, and parties, cautious optimism, joy, and memories of loved ones lost under Saddam. Can you imagine the feelings of Iraqis abroad as they watched events unfold today in Baghdad? Iraqi listeners, share your hearts. Can you believe Saddam Hussein is on the run? What are you feeling tonight? Your hopes, your fears? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got quite a roundup of folks joining us tonight. Joining me in the studio is Shakar Mustafa, a visiting professor of Irish and Arabic studies at Boston University and former vice president of the English department at the University of Mosul in northern Iraq. He left Iraq in 1990. Good evening and welcome, Shakar Mustafa.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Joining me from Cleveland is Ithar Dawish, also an Iraqi-American who left Baghdad in 1982. Good evening and welcome, Ithar Dawish.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for being with us. We're also joined from San Diego by Maha Hussein, professor of medicine and urology at the University of Michigan. Ms. Hussein left Iraq in 1983 and is president of the Iraqi Forum for Democracy. Good evening and welcome, Maha Hussein.
Hello.
We're going to talk with you all tonight about your reactions to events today in Baghdad and events of the last 3 weeks in Iraq. But I want to go first to Dearborn, Michigan, where Ala Faik is joining us. He's an Iraqi who came to the United States 28 years ago as a student. Tomorrow, he is heading home by hook or by crook to Iraq. It will be the first time he's visited his country since the day he left in 1975. Good evening and welcome, Ala Faik.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Very well. Thanks for joining us. You've just been in Dearborn, where we heard on the NPR News at the top of the hour a big, big party going on in the streets. What was the scene there, Ala Faik?
It's unbelievable, unbelievable. The people are honking their horns. They gathered together in a public park. There was more than 3,000 persons. I could count people still as I left. People are still coming down to the park, dancing, singing, reading poetry, chanting, waving the Iraqi and the American flags, carrying signs, thanking the United States and Britain, thanking the President Bush for liberating Iraq. The most interesting sign I read was Saddam Hussein is gone with the wind, and Saddam Hussein is a shame to all Arabs. And one of the most interesting events happened. There was all kind of networks carrying the event, and Al Jazeera showed up, and the people booed the Jazeera out because they felt they didn't represent the truth in their covering of the war and the event, and they didn't criticize the regime and all the crimes they done. So
a pretty tough crowd for the Arab TV network Al Jazeera today. Of course, Dearborn, Michigan is a big center of Arab American population, and I'm sure there are many Iraqis among them. So these were mostly Iraqis tonight. What were people saying to each other at the I guess celebrations the word in Dearborn, Michigan, Ala Faik? What were the crowd saying?
They are congratulating each other, hugging each other, kissing each other. They are, you will not believe the energy people and the happiness the people are showing in as they see each other. It's unbelievable. I saw a lot of friends over there. It's unbelievable the amount of people who are showing up. As I'm dropping, other people were coming. So it is. It became a center for all Iraqis who lives in Michigan to show up. I expect the numbers even will rise up more than what I told you. You know, there's more than 170,000 of Iraqi American live in Southeast Michigan.
So that's
and
a big number.
Is the center of it.
Ala Faik, I understand that you are leaving on a journey to Iraq tomorrow. When did you book your ticket?
Today.
And what are you going back to do, and how will you get in?
Well, I worked my arrangement through the United States government. I'm going to be working with a team of Iraqis to create a free and democratic and independent media in Iraq. To create a democracy in any society, the cornerstone of it, it is a free, independent media. And the regime for the last 32 years destroyed the Iraqi media. They made them a mouthpiece to the regime, brainwash the people to accept all the oppression of the people. People doesn't. So we have generation of people. The only things they seen in the media, only Saddam Hussein pictures, and you need to re-educate people.
Alafiq, we hear your enthusiasm tonight, and we know you're going to be in the air on your way to Kuwait City tomorrow, and then right up, I suppose, into Iraq. And we wish you very good luck there, and thanks for joining us from the outskirts of Dearborn, Michigan tonight.
Thank you for having me, and have a wonderful day. And thank you, United States. Thank you, American people, for all what you've done today.
Alafiq, thank you for joining us. We're talking tonight about two Iraqis, about Iraq on the day that Baghdad has shed Saddam Hussein. What's your question for Iraqis watching from America tonight? Can you hear the emotion, the drama, the joy? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK with quite a round table of Iraqis in America joining us tonight. I want to turn to them now. Shakir Mustafa, you're right here in the studio with me. You hear the enthusiasm in Alafiq's voice. He's just come from a big
Absolutely.
Gathering in Dearborn. You've seen the images
Absolutely.
Today. Are you sharing this, or are you more circumspect? What are your feelings this evening?
There is a lot in this that I identify with. I share it. The images are unbelievable simply because Iraq has been under the hammer, the Iraqis, I should say, for too long, and the people, you know, have been waiting for a day that did not seem to be coming.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they are seeing it in front of them, it is an unbelievable sight. But I must also say that I'm looking at this with mixed feelings because I'm concerned about what is happening in Iraq now, the lawlessness that is sweeping very much, not only Basra and Baghdad, Reuters and other Arab news media, CNN, the New York Times, have reported that there are a lot of looters on the streets, and the absence, you know, of a civil authority in Baghdad must be alarming to a lot of people.
And, of course, in Basra, that's been going on for days and days now, and the British have said it's not our job to stop that. Our first job is to deal with the armed opposition.
The British said today that the looting stopped simply because there is nothing else to loot. It's a distressing thing.
It's distressing and hard to see that right across the country. Maha Hussein, your feelings today as you saw the images come across on TV from Baghdad?
Absolute joy. This is a day that we've waited for a long time, all of us. It's wonderful to see the people. Our day started at 4 o'clock this morning when we got a call to say, watch the TV, LBC is broadcasting live from Saddam City, which... Saddam had given its name to it, where he knew very well the people hated him. It's almost ironic that that was where the dancing in the street began. And the chanting was going from the people saying, no God but God, and Saddam is the enemy of God, which was remarkable to see people doing that in the streets.
And Ethar Dawish, your feelings as you saw these images coming across?
Euphoria, ecstasy. I think that these images, I mean, I cried this morning. And yeah, I was up at around 4 o'clock watching this.
How did you know it was on at 4 a.m.?
I haven't been able to sleep more than 3 hours a day for like the last couple of weeks, and I've been waking up around that time because it seemed like every day something new started happening and around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just had it in me. You know, I mean, I cried. I cried tears of joy, and I cried tears of sadness too, because I really think that this is something that should have happened in 1992, and this is 1991. This is 12 years too late, but you know, better late than never. And I'm very happy. I'm very ecstatic. And you know, I mean, I think this is a paradigm shattering day for the world.
We're talking tonight with Iraqis in America, in San Diego, in Cleveland, and right here in our On Point studio, talking to Iraqis about Iraq on the day that Baghdad has shed Saddam Hussein. You can join the conversation as well. What's your question for Iraqis watching from America tonight? Can you hear the emotion, the drama, the joy, the hopes, the fears? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook with Shakir Mustafa, Ethar Dawish, and Maha Hussein. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking to Iraqis about Iraq on the day that Baghdad has shed Saddam Hussein. What's your question for Iraqis watching from America tonight? And Iraqi listeners, how are you responding to the gush of images from Baghdad today? Are you popping a cork tonight? Are you dancing? Are you still scared? Do you see a new day dawning, or is it still too early to celebrate? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight from San Diego, California, by Maha Hussein, from Cleveland, Ohio, by Ithar Dawish, and here with me in the On Point studio, Shakar Mustafa, all Iraqis in America who have watched and listened today as events unfolded in Baghdad. Shakar Mustafa, you expressed concern about the lawlessness that has been widely reported in Basra, and today lots of looting in Baghdad. We're told primarily of government offices, not so much of private businesses. Is that a hopeful distinction in your mind, or are you afraid that this is going to spin into anarchy?
It would be a helpful distinction, but actually reports also mention that shops have been broken into, houses. And strangely enough, the Red Cross also reported that throngs of looters were obstructing entrances to hospitals. You know, the country has been, you know, under a severe regime of embargo for 13 years.
Shortages of all kinds of things.
Shortages of medicines have been really severe, and I can understand why would they try to loot hospitals.
But Shakar Mustafa, it's a serious issue, the security issue right now. But when you look past the next few weeks, when presumably one way or another order will be reestablished, are you feeling optimistic on this day or concerned?
I am mildly optimistic, because when you live in Iraq, you cannot, you know, believe it when such an oppressive regime is removed. The Iraqis, anyway, have been, you know, under a lot of pressure before the war, and 3 weeks of continuous bombardment, mm-hmm. very heavy circumstances. They need time to breathe. And I think after, you know, they regain their consciousness, so to speak, from the shock, they'll probably be the ones who will be deciding the next move for the Iraqis. Mm. But there is, absolutely, there is optimism, simply because Saddam's absence from the scene is a big achievement.
Maha Hussein, you left Iraq in 1983. You've been out of the country for a very long time. But as you look back and you talk with relatives who must still be there, are you optimistic tonight? Is this going to work out? You have seen firsthand in the United States the great unease about whether or not this can be successfully pulled off. What do you think?
Sure, Tom. Actually, I left in 1980. I came to the States in 1983.
Okay.
So I've been out for 23 years.
It's a long time.
I am personally very optimistic, honestly. I think for the Iraqis, the biggest hurdle was to go beyond Saddam. And that was the biggest mountain to climb. Now that Saddam is out of the way, whether dead or alive, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that the people have learned not to fear this vicious man anymore, and they're out on the streets. There's going to be a period where I think there's going to be some chaos. Don't expect people who have been put in a bottle and choked for 23 years to behave in any normal way, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the fact that they are looting the government offices, clearly there's chaos. Otherwise, nobody likes to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is just a manifestation of getting back at the government. I do think that Iraq's history is such that I am extremely optimistic regarding its future. Iraq is a wealthy country with tremendous manpower and brain power, not to mention natural wealth. The people are invariably educated. It is one of the probably elite countries in the Middle East, certainly until Saddam destroyed it. And I think that they will get back on their feet. I think that leadership will emerge from within Iraq. Clearly, the United States and the coalition forces have to maintain their presence to ensure law and order until internal authorities take over and democracy foundations are laid.
And Ithar Darwish, you watched in tears this morning, and we can understand that. It has been a brutal, brutal regime. When you look through those tears to the future, are you optimistic? Has the United States, in your view, so far acted in a manner that can lead to a successful outcome here?
Yes, I want to say that I am indeed optimistic. I think that the United States has acted in a manner that would be conducive to the future. And what I mean by that is, I mean, my mother had spoken to her mother and a sister and a brother and sister of hers in Baghdad. And even they had said this was at least before the telephone lines were cut about 6 or 7 days ago. Mm-hmm. They said that this was better than 1991 and that people seemed to think that it seemed like the bombing was not was certainly discriminated towards to the areas where government and military centers of power were.
And yet the hospitals are full of Iraqis, many of them women, children, civilians.
You know, and I think unfortunately in this case, part of this is that, you know, people close by got hurt, and also Saddam, you know, was unscrupulous about placing his military emplacements and otherwise. And of course, there are mistakes that are made, but I just want to say also that, I mean, I think like Dr. Hussein, I have an undying faith in the capacity and the spirit of the Iraqi people. I would agree with her. Iraq is one of the most educated cultured and cosmopolitan societies in the Middle East, and Iraqis will rise, and they will be able to build a new and a vibrant society.
Ether Dawish, Maha Hussein, Shaka Mustafa, stand by. A lot of people want to join this conversation tonight, and I want to welcome them in. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Ayed is calling from Iron Mountain, Michigan. Good evening and welcome, Ayed.
That's Ayed, A-Y-A-D.
Excuse me.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I just wanted to express my happiness. I haven't watched the images on TV, but just listening to you guys gave me this sense of joy that I want to be part of it and let you know how wonderful it is to finally get to this point and know that we're there.
Are you Iraqi-born, Ayed?
Yes, I am. I was born and raised in Baghdad, and I came to this country when I was 18, and it's obvious that I haven't returned back, and for the reasons, the obvious reasons that I've stayed here. Fortunately, I was... I adopted this country, and the country adopted me, and I'm happily living here with a family, and this is my home.
Can you imagine going back to Iraq now, or is that for others to do, Ayed?
Well, you know, I'd love to go and visit. I still have connections, direct connections in the country. I have parents, families, and I'd love to go back and reclaim some of the images that I grew up with.
But here's a vote for joy today, and thanks for sharing it, Ayed. Thanks very much for calling us. Bonnie's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Bonnie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Well, I almost feel like hanging up because I have some Iraqi exile friends, and they've been gone from their country many years, and they share the joy of all your, you know, guests, but I think talking to them and emailing them, they feel ambivalent because of the bombing and all the civilian casualties.
Sure.
And another one expressed to me, he said, although we hate Saddam, he said, if we have a democracy, he's worried that fundamentalists might win the elections. And one other point is, what if a new Iraqi democracy expresses a pro-Palestinian attitude? You know, that and the fundamentalists, are your guests thinking about the possibility of the United States intervening in any elections or meddling in any elections if a new Iraqi government takes positions not popular with the United States?
So, Bonnie, you're feeling the joy, but also looking out at the kind of minefield that could lie ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, we hear it loud and clear. Bonnie, thank you for that, and thank you for your call. Shakra Mustafa, how do you see this unfolding? Do you see the United States, with all the power it's brought to bear in Iraq, being willing to really and truly hand this over to Iraqis, come what may, fundamentalist, pro-Palestinian, you name it?
I think it's imperative. It's essential that the United States enables the Iraqis to run their affairs by themselves. Is this going to happen? There is a big question mark, and this is, I think, the cause for a lot of ambivalence and mixed feelings, not only among the Iraqis in Iraq now, but also in the Arab and Islamic world, that the United States did not, you know, embark on this campaign to liberate the Iraqis, that there are other motives, and these motives might get in the way and very much disrupt the transference of a post-Saddam Iraq into a country that celebrates and respects democratic and human rights.
Maha Hussein, on this day when we see images that align with liberation, do you have those those lurking concerns yourself or not?
I actually don't. I think Iraq's history is such that, and this is just to get back with your previous caller, mm-hmm. Iraq's history is such that we've never had a fundamentalist streak in general. You know, oppression for a long period of time and lack of hope in the future leads people to desperate acts.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the fear of what might occur is not a good reason not to have democracy in Iraq. Our best friends in the world are democratic nations, and they don't necessarily agree with us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the purpose of having a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
The democracy, establishing a democracy in Iraq, the purpose of it is not to agree with the United States on every single issue. The purpose of it is to be good for the people of Iraq. And if we disagree, then we disagree as allies and we agree as allies.
And you believe that the United States, Washington, will permit that?
You know, I think people have to take charge of their destiny. And people like your callers and her friends mm-hmm. and us, mm-hmm. we must keep the pressure to ensure that there is no way but democracy for really just about anywhere in the Middle East, but especially to start with Iraq. As far as the issue of having a pro-Palestinian state,
mm-hmm.
I don't see that this is a threat. You know, there is a lot of injustice that occurs in the world and certainly in the Middle East, and this is time for peace right now. Peace for Palestinians, peace for Israelis, and I think that is the only way that Middle East is going to get into any kind of long-term peace, is to have justice in it, freedom and democracy for everybody.
Christopher's calling from Boston. Hi, Christopher. You're on the air.
Good evening. Wonderful program tonight, and congratulations for all of your guests and the joy they feel. My question is really, what are your guests looking for in terms of sustained commitment by the United States after the military action is over? I mean, do public referendums like re-electing Bush and his architects, does some of this make a difference? Is it additional direct investment in education and infrastructure beyond basic reconstruction? What kinds of actions by the U.S. are going to be required for there to be an effective long-term strategic relationship between the United States and the new Iraq?
Got it, Christopher. Thanks for your call. Ithar Dawish, what are you looking for in the near term and the long term from the United States now that it has such a major footprint in Iraq?
Well, I think the first thing that we're going to be looking for is for the United States to be taking concrete steps to empower Iraqis to be able to take charge of their futures. I think that alongside of those political enabling steps, we're talking about help in the rebuilding short term, but we're also talking about investment. Yes, investment in Iraq, in its infrastructure, allowing Iraq to proceed towards a market economy and encouraging both American investment and also worldwide investment. I think Iraqis need to, you know, get jobs, get security, be able to build their own futures, and the way that they're going to be doing that is if there is investment that will be able to provide that.
And what about U.S. troops in the near term and the long term?
Well, I think in the near term, obviously, for the purposes of both providing security as well as rooting out weapons of mass destruction, I think that you're going to find a significant troop presence. But I do think that this will decline, and it should decline, you know, within the next year or two to a relatively small amount. Now, in terms of what will happen down the road, I do agree that Iraq will need to form a strategic relationship with the United States, because an Iraq that is demilitarized or whose military has been kind of defanged would be at the mercy of the predatory ambitions of its neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is northern neighbor as well as its eastern neighbor as well as other countries in the region.
Turkey, Iran, and maybe others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that it makes sense to have a strategic relationship with the United States, but I think that, you know, you're not going to be looking at a 50,000 force there. You may be looking at you may be looking at an air base or something like that or a small troop presence. But I would not see anything beyond that.
Well, time will tell on that one. There may be other agendas there at the same time. I want to reach out right now to Santa Ana, California, and Mazin Youssef. He's West Coast Director of the Iraqi National Congress. Good evening and welcome, Mazin Youssef.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I understand that there's a party going on at your house tonight. What's happening?
Oh, yeah. You know, what can a person do when they're really, really joyful? You bring your friends, your relatives, your neighbors. You know, there's Iraqis here. There's Americans. There's, Kurdish Iraqis. There's Arabic. There's Christian, Muslim, Sunni, Shia. You know, just Iraqis are welcome in this party, of course, in addition to our American neighbors.
And all this party was put together today because of what you've seen and heard out of Baghdad on this day.
Well, I was awoken by Fox News this morning at 7, and they told me what happened. And, of course, the first thing I did is I called my friends and I said, as I promised you, the night that Baghdad falls will be a party in my house. So we were expecting, by now about 50 people, we're expecting about 150 to show up.
Mazin, you left Iraq in 1978. You were 16 years old. That's a long time ago. Does the flame of love for this country still burn in you?
You know what? It feels like I left yesterday. To be exact, it's June 30th, 1978 is when I left that country. And in a few few weeks, that will be June 30th. That will be exactly 25 years. I did not lose touch with Iraq. I know Iraq like it was, like I've been there yesterday, because there's about 15-20% of the country living outside the control of Saddam. We're really not in exile. We're not really not on vacation, as many people think that we're just enjoying our life here. We left because we had to leave. We had no choice. You either die or you leave the country.
And so Mazin, when you tap the glass tonight to make the toast, what are you going to be saying? What's on your mind? What exactly are you celebrating on this evening?
There's only one word that can come to my mind in all these Iraqis that we have here: democracy. You know, if we endure this whole 35 years only to be given another dictator to replace Saddam, then we might as well have just kept Saddam. Democracy is the only word on our minds, and that's what we will try and work at and try to achieve inside Iraq. And even living in the U.S., we will try to continue to lobby Washington and make sure they do not, shortchange us and hand us another, military dictator to follow.
It's a big word and a big ambition, but we wish you absolutely the best luck with it. Mazin Youssef, thank you for joining us from Santa Ana, California tonight.
Thank you very much.
Maha Hussein, I know we have to lose you in just a few minutes, but it must be on people's minds tonight also, as Saddam Hussein is apparently driven out of Baghdad, or at least out of power, the losses that people have suffered in your own family, perhaps.
Well, I'll tell you, everybody in Iraq has a story of a loss. And one day, some of that history will be documented. There's absolutely what had happened over the last 35 years, no example to it, I would say, in the Middle East. We've all lost people, but we are also very happy that the future is going to be brighter for those who are living, and certainly for the children of Iraq.
And you feel that confidence tonight?
I am an optimistic person. I've never stopped hoping that an end will occur. This has been the darkest ages of Iraq ever in its history, and probably the longest streak of oppression, brutality, just about anti-human behavior has occurred in this 34 years.
Mahan Hussein, we hope it's ending now. We thank you for joining us tonight. I know we have to let you go.
Thank you.
Maha Hussein joined us from San Diego, California. She's professor of medicine at the University of Michigan and president of the Iraqi Forum for Democracy. She fled Baghdad in 1983. We're talking to Iraqis about Iraq tonight, on the day that Baghdad has shed Saddam Hussein. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking to Iraqis about Iraq tonight, on the day that Baghdad has shed Saddam Hussein. What's your question for Iraqis watching from America tonight? Can you hear the emotion, the drama, the joy in the voices of those Iraqis and Iraqi-Americans who are joining us tonight? You can join as well. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been talking in the studio with Shakra Mustafa, visiting professor of Irish and Arabic studies at Boston University. He was former vice president of the English department at the University of Mosul. He left Iraq in 1990. From Cleveland, Ohio, with Itar Dawish, an Iraqi-American, left Baghdad with his family in 1982. And quite a story there. We're going to get that before the hour ends. We're joined right now from Nashville, Tennessee, by Amar Latif. He's a financial advisor and Iraqi-American who left Baghdad in 1982 with his family. Good evening and welcome, Amar Latif.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for joining us. Tell us your feelings, your reaction, your thoughts on this big day in Baghdad.
This is a moment of celebration for all Iraqi people. This is a moment to thank the brave men and women that sacrificed their lives to give Iraq a new birth. we are extremely excited, and this is a moment we've been dreaming of for the past 21 years. It's the euphoria level is extremely high. We're here at my parents' house. We've got lots of friends and relatives, Americans and neighbors. Everybody here is we're celebrating beers and I can talk and talk and.
Amar Latif, what's the mood there today? Are you laughing? Are you crying? Are you remembering? Are you looking ahead?
Everything. It's going to be every day a new day of celebration for me. And for every Iraqi person, this is the time we can talk. If you had called me yesterday, I would hung up and not dare saying this.
Even here in Nashville, Tennessee.
I'm here in the U.S., and the fear is in me yesterday.
And today it's gone. Your family has paid a price.
Two of my cousins not just paid the price. We wish we know the price. He probably guinea-pigged them for mustard gas or nerve gas. There's about 10,000 Iraqis at the age of 18 to 26 that they are not in prisons and not anywhere. You cannot get an answer.
And who knows where they are
or how they are killed.
It's not a good way to lose any loved one. Amar Latif, stand by in Nashville. I want to turn to Ithar Dawish in Cleveland. Ithar Dawish, share with us something of your story. You left Iraq when you were fairly young. Your parents were scientists in Iraq, fairly prominent. Saddam's regime had a direct impact on their life. Describe it for us.
Well, actually, yeah. I left in 1979. We left shortly after, or a few months after Saddam began consolidating his hold on power. My mother was a professor at the University of Baghdad in chemistry. She was one of the authors on the chemistry textbook that was being used. My father was held the equivalent rank of a dean in research and in graduate studies at the Technological Institute in Baghdad. None of them were Baathists. When Saddam came to power,
what happened to them?
Saddam wanted people to, in their types of positions, to start joining the Ba'ath Party, and my parents wanted nothing to do with that. Both of my parents were lost their jobs. My mother's name was removed from the chemistry textbook. They both were detained, humiliated. They suffered internal exile. They were sent to research institutions or laboratories in other parts of the country.
And you were forced to live with other relatives, not your parents.
That is correct, sir, for a few months. I think what was happening in that time was that Saddam was also busy consolidating his hold on power and eliminating other opponents or rivals within the regime.
Mm-hmm.
The situation continued on for a few months until my parents made a good show of, how can I say this, collaborating or making look like they were going along. And what happened was that my parents would usually take trips to Europe to attend conferences and things like that, and we made it look like we were going to be taking off for a couple of weeks. The house, the car, nothing was sold. We just made it look like a routine trip.
Mm-hmm.
And we left and we never came back.
And that was it. Are you or your parents thinking of going back now?
Well, I'm thinking of going back, but I will go back for a limited period of time to assist or to help out later on. My father is thinking very seriously of going back and aiding in the reconstruction. His skills as a educator, maybe a lot of Iraqis are educated, but I think that my father, having been in the United States, certainly could help.
Mm. Shakir Mustafa, I want to turn to you. Almost everywhere we touch in the Iraqi community, we feel this the loss, that one way or another, directly in the family, a cousin, a best friend. The price paid by Iraqis for this regime has been a very deep one. How does the country exercise that? How does it get past that? How does it How does it move forward with all that pain behind it? Do we need a South African-style truth and reconciliation? Does that have any place in the culture of Iraq? Or
perhaps. You know, all scenarios are open. But I think I will agree with all my colleagues, your terrific guests. This is a country with massive resources, a very educated, enterprising middle class. And this class, you know, will be able to take Iraq out of this, you know, sad condition and prepared for a better future. The country also has layers of culture behind it. It's one of the most ancient and celebrated civilizations, the Sumerian, the Assyrians, Islamic culture.
Mesopotamia, Babylon,
absolutely.
Ancient Baghdad, all the rest.
This culture, you know, doesn't go away. It is living in the people, and it is awaiting, you know, to be awakened, called to action, and it will spring into action.
And a longtime commercial center, and before Saddam Hussein, and even during his early years, very integrated with economies around the world.
Absolutely, the world. It's a very cosmopolitan, secular country with a very diverse population, Muslims, Jews, Christians, Kurds, Arabs, Turkmenis, I mean, you name it, all kinds of sects, ethnic groups. And the country has very much, you know, forged a culture out of this diversity.
We're talking to Iraqis about Iraq tonight. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. Fahad is calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Fahad. You're on the air.
Hi. First, I just want to express my joy, like my absolute, you know, joy. At first, before the war, I wasn't exactly sure how I felt about, you know, American troops, you know, entering and kind of doing this and the motives behind it and everything. But
are you Iraqi, Fahad? Are you an Iraqi?
Yes, yes, I am. I'm 19. I left from Iraq to America. I was smuggled out by some friends of family in 2000.
Smuggled out in 2000, and you had misgivings when the war began.
Yes. I wasn't exactly sure. I didn't know how to feel about, you know, whether it was for the oil or why Americans were going in. But when I saw Saddam's statue crumble this morning at 4, like, I couldn't do anything but cry. Like, that was a justification for me. My father was one of the rebels under the regime, Saddam's regime, and he, we assume, was killed because we didn't see him after he left one night. And my family, like, I felt like that the sadness, the liberation was not just for me but for him. When the statue fell, like, I felt like it was liberating everyone, both dead and alive, and I feel that I want to go back there, and I want to continue what, you know, my family worked on, and everything that I think everyone who cared enough to leave the country when it was hell to live there should go back and, you know, help to rebuild the country.
Fahad, may I ask you, do you want to go back to rebuild or for revenge? What's your motive?
I feel that revenge, the revenge has already been taken, I feel. I think that, you know, with the Ba'ath Party and with, you know, the Republican Guard being taken down, I feel that that's the revenge. And, you know, I feel I want to go back to rebuild because I still have, you know, friends there who I haven't spoken to since, you know, the phones went out days ago. And even before that, friends I haven't spoken to since I left there. And I haven't really made a home here. Like, it's been 3 years since I've been here. And I feel like that Baghdad is where I grew up. That is my actual home. And I feel like I want to go back there.
It sounds like you may be there soon, Fahad. And thank you for calling and sharing with us tonight. Dan's calling from Seekonk, Massachusetts. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I can't help but feel a sense of healing and joy. But I also can't help but think that there's not too many of us at this party. It's a party, but there are so many people that aren't here that should be.
Who's missing in your mind, Dan?
The rest of the Islamic community, the rest of the Arab countries. How do we bring them into this party of healing? How do we involve them in this healing process?
It is a terrific question and one without an easy answer.
Can I take that, please?
Is that Amar Latif?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you, Amar Latif, before you answer,
yes.
I've just been looking at some reports of Arab newspapers today in response to what we're talking about tonight and what we're hearing so much joy about from the Iraqis on this show, at least tonight.
Yes.
Here's the Arab News talking about the immense shame and humiliation of what has happened in Iraq. Here's the Egyptian Gazette saying that this is treachery. That there's the Syria Times saying Bush is acting worse than Hitler. Arab News saying America now rules the world either directly or by proxy, and there's nothing that anyone can do about it. There's an awful, and we heard earlier from Christopher Dickey with Newsweek magazine in Amman, Jordan, saying there is real anger at these images today from Baghdad.
I'd like to answer that, too.
They're jealous.
Amar first. What do you think, Amar Latif?
First, they are jealous. Jealous, jealous, and jealous again. Those people that are in the same shoes we're in, but of course we are much, much more stressed, and they cannot do anything about it. Number two is, I've been explaining this to all those peace-loving people who did their peace walks in the streets, that you don't feel the heat of the fire and the pain of the fire unless you're walking on it. And you cannot have those nine world nation, United Nations countries sitting watching this people burning their feet on the fire and say, we have to agree on how to lift the put off the fire.
So you see a lack of empathy for Iraqi suffering, but here again in the Daily Star of Beirut, I'm reading, the new rules of the game, now being explained to the world through the televised display of Mesopotamian show-and-tell are, the sacking of Baghdad is designed to send signals to all other Middle Eastern and Asian regimes that the U.S. finds annoying, threatening, distasteful, worrisome, or even just a little strange, that they're in trouble if they don't keep in line. Ithar Darwish, what do you make of this? Of this bitterness is perhaps too light. It's almost rage from the rest of the Arab world at what's happening there.
Well, I mean, you know, I will on the other hand, though, for all their credit, Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya and some of these other TV networks showed these pictures without the colorful commentary. But I just wanted to say that, I mean, the words of shame and treachery, shame should be on some of these other Arabs who swallowed Saddam's lies and who weren't with the coalition helping the liberation of the Iraqi people. The treachery is to the Iraqi people. They ignored Saddam's hundreds of thousands of murder victims in Iraq. They ignored their silent cries, and they decided to swallow the lies of this tyrant. And I'll tell you one thing. When I said earlier, this is a paradigm shattering event, this is what it will be. Arabs, they're intellectuals, they're chattering classes, are now going to have to step back, and they will do it. Arabs are not stupid.
And watch what's going on here. Ithar Darwish, I want to turn to Shakir Mustafa. Shakir Mustafa, you of all of our guests tonight are the most recently arrived.
Yes.
More than 10 years ago, but still, we're talking with others who've been here 20 and more years, and you seem the most subdued to me, and I find that interesting.
I think, you know, The answers my colleagues have been providing are a little too simplistic. There is massive resentment of the United States in the Arab and Muslim world, and this should be understood. It is for the benefit of both Iraq, the Arab world, and the Muslim world, as well as the United States. The Arab and Muslim world have been suspicious about America's motives. They have been hurt by America's policies in the Middle East. And I think it is, you know, incumbent on the United States to very much, you know, change that kind of policy and get the trust of that world again.
Let us hope for that. I want to thank each and every one of you for sharing so openly with us tonight. Shakir Mustafa, visiting professor at Boston University, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And Amar Latif in Nashville, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
And Ithar Darwish in Cleveland, Ohio, Iraqi-American left Baghdad in 1982, currently a urologist in Cleveland, Ohio. Thank you for being with us on this remarkable day.
My pleasure, sir.
For continuing conversation on the war in Iraq, including a gallery of photos from Baghdad today, go to our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.